I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, finally happened. We have a well-placed mole in the Washington Education Association. And you won't believe, or maybe you will, the insane stuff that they're saying about the two initiatives to protect girls' sports and parental rights. Plus, how exactly do Democrats plan to pass an income tax on high earners if graduated income tax are illegal under Washington State's constitution? And the Portland FBI charges a man with threatening federal agents and their families. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A reminder, we will have a show tomorrow, Wednesday. We will not have a show this week on Thanksgiving, and we'll have a regular episode of Sundays with Subscribers on Sunday. Did it finally happen? After all this time of railing on the teachers' union, talking about the dangerous policies of the Washington Education Association, we finally have a mole on the inside. A mole on the inside that's monitoring their every move, recording their every conversation. Legally, I don't really know, and frankly, I don't care. And it's our friend Alicia Perkins with OSD Rescue, who was contacted by a member of the WEA, a very well-placed member of the WEA, who we will not name to protect their anonymity so they can continue to gather information for us. But Alicia had this source who provided her with video of a WEA leadership membership meeting, a Zoom meeting that happened last week, where they were talking about the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. Of course, those two initiatives are IL-26-001, which is another effort to protect parental rights in Washington state, saying, hey, you can't keep secrets from parents about what's happening with their kids at school, common sense stuff. And the other one, IL-26-638, which is protecting fairness in girls' sports. It's saying, no, girls should not have to compete against biological boys, and we're not going to do any of this anymore. So the Washington Education Association is the biggest culprit of pushing their own personal politics on kids, but also trying to weave radical gender ideology into every aspect of our public education system. So this mole within the WEA knew that there was going to be this Zoom meeting for leadership and membership to talk about how they were going to fight back against these initiatives. So they decided they were going to record that meeting. They were going to give it to Alicia Perkins, who turned around and gave it to us. So I do want to give Alicia credit on education issues. There is no one better in the state than Alicia Perkins on uncovering these things. So we thought, oh, this will just piss off the WEA today. What a great way to start a Tuesday. Can you think of a better way to start a Tuesday? So we're going to play some snippets of this Zoom meeting, and it talks a lot about their strategy around how they're going to try to fight back against these initiatives, but it also gives us insight into their mindset, how they really believe that these are hateful, horrible efforts to protect parental rights. And keeping boys out of girls' sports is just the worst possible thing that any human being could want to do. And it also will give you insights into their twisted mindset about gender as a social construct. So let's go through a few of these. First, we're just going to play one today. I think we're going to play more of these clips tomorrow because there's just so much there. So most of the clips from this meeting, surreptitiously recorded, that we're going to play for you are about the girls' sports issue. But there was this one in particular that talks about the parental rights issue. So of course, the chief argument here, and one of the reasons this came about, is there were kids who were going to school and they were being convinced they were transgender. Perfectly fine at home, no other issue. They go to school and they wind up with some ideologically driven teacher that is planting it in their brain that they're transgender. And then that secret would be kept from parents. So a parent might have a child that's a boy, goes to school and they call that child by a different name, by a girl's name, by girl's pronouns, and the teacher and the school counselor and the other students and faculty are forced, and some of them want to, keep this secret from parents, so parents are left completely in the dark. So the initiative on parental rights would upend that and say you can't keep that secret from parents. If a child's coming to school and using a different name, using different pronouns, you have to let the parents know what's happening. But according to one member of the WEA on this meeting, that would be just too burdensome for school nurses.
We can disagree about, like, the topic of people who are trans and whether or not they deserve rights. We can disagree on that. But we can all agree that this is a crazy amount of workload that's being added to our nurses if they're having to call for anything that they're doing.
First of all, nobody's saying you have to call for anything that they're doing. But yes, if a nurse is seeing my child, your child at school, and there's something going on with that child, yes, you have to call the parents. I can't even remember one time when I was a kid when I'd have to go to the nurse's office where my parents wouldn't immediately be notified. Like, hey, old Brandy, you know, fell down and hurt herself in gym class. I fell down a lot. Yeah, you got to pick up the phone. Is that really asking so much? That's literally your job. You're the school nurse. Your job is to take care of kids when there's an issue where they need to see the school nurse. And yeah, if that's an issue that parents need to know about under the law, well, you're going to have to pick up the phone and call them. Wow, how difficult is that? All right, getting into the issue of trans athletes. So this is the same individual on this WEA meeting. Here is the rationale they, them, I don't know, he, she, I have no idea, gives for why this just isn't a big deal.
As we message, especially in these supportive areas, to remind folks that this is about K-12 sports, like school sports, not Olympic athletes that have been training and specializing since they were two. This is about public school sports. So like making sure that that messaging is also very clear, that it's not the professional level sports that you're like hearing about on the news that we're talking about. We're talking about middle school volleyball.
So it doesn't matter? And by the way, I guarantee if I asked that individual directly, oh, so you don't want men competing against women in the Olympics? They would still support men competing against women in the Olympics. They're just trying to twist the argument. Oh, these aren't professional athletes. What about Annalee Wilson, who is someone we've had on the show who spoke at our Sunday event? She can very well be a collegiate athlete in track and field. She can get a scholarship in track and field to run. But the last major track meet she participated in at the state level, she got second place to a biological boy. And if you're a recruiter and you're just looking and you don't know, it doesn't say man or woman. It doesn't say that Annalee lost to a man. For all they know, they're looking at the numbers and Annalee lost to a girl who is just faster than her. And that's just not true. And by the way, how do you think people get to the freaking Olympics? They start practicing and committing very early in life when they're kids. Some of them are naturally gifted. Some of them put a lot of time in. Yes, at the elementary level, at the junior high level, at the high school level, that propels them into collegiate sports, and it propels them into potentially professional sports. You look at any professional basketball player, volleyball player, Olympian, and ask when they started competing seriously. And they're probably going to tell you as soon as they were able to walk. So that's just an asinine argument. All right, this also makes no sense to me. So there is an argument that's made on this WEA meeting that trying to keep boys out of girls' sports would somehow be too burdensome for coaches.
You know, athletic coaches now, you know, our WEA members, athletic coaches, or sometimes community members, athletic coaches, are now in charge of something like this, which, you know, is completely outside of the bounds of reasonable. When I've talked to athletic coaches, they're like, this, we're just here to coach. Like, this is way beyond anything that would be reasonable to expect of coaches. So what we're gonna do now is
it's not the coaches that are doing it, it's healthcare providers.
Yes, and the coaches now will be in charge of tracking all the paperwork. And it goes back to that penalties line where if it just caught, I mean, I think that makes a good point, right? Like, these are poorly written, they're confusing, they're unnecessary, and they're harmful. And it's not up to our coaches to be, you know, involved in patrolling that paperwork either.
First of all, I guarantee 100% she's never actually talked to a coach. Guarantee she's never had that conversation with a coach. And you're telling me it's more burdensome to not have this situation where boys are playing on girls' teams than it is right now? where you've got athletes and parents, athletes walking out, sitting out of games, parents demanding to know why a boy is playing on the girls' team, all this drama around the issue? No. This will be far less burdensome for coaches to not have to deal with the drama of having boys on girls' teams. You think they want boys competing against their girls? Of course they don't. So again, they're just making up this, oh, you know, coaches, this is really hard for them. And you're saying it's going to be this extra burden. Wasn't it Chris Reichdahl who said, oh, this is no big deal. We have maybe eight to 10 trans athletes. Okay, let's take him at his word. I don't believe that. I think there's probably more given the ideological makeup of our schools and what they're forcing on kids. But if it's 8 to 10, then it really can't be that much of a burden for coaches at all. And as somebody interjected and pointed out, this really isn't something coaches should have to deal with, because the idea is to say that when you take your regular physical exam, your doctor has to attest to whether you're a boy or a girl, so you're not going to be on the girls' team to begin with. So really, it's going to be out of the purview of coaches. They're just making shit up. And it shows the sort of mindset. And then there was this, there's a moderator in this WEA meeting, and she's totally, again, so they're spreading misinformation within their meeting. So it's really no surprise that the WEA members go out and they protest over this and they spread misinformation on their Facebook pages and misinformation within their community, because the moderator is talking about how, oh, only girls will have to undergo these invasive physical exams to prove their sex.
This is shocking news to every member that I've spoken to, where it talks about every girl over the age of 11. So as most folks know, all student athletes have a physical every other year. And really that's about cardiovascular health, et cetera. School nurses, you know, feel free to add in the chat if you like. But this would mean that a student would have to prove their, you know, their genitals are a certain way, their reproductive anatomy. And that is there on page 3. But again, this is for girls only. Starting at age 11, which is shocking, to say the least.
No, it's for people who want to participate in girls' sports. That's the requirement. So yes, it would be for boys who are claiming to be girls. If there is someone claiming to want to play on the in girls' sports, and you already said it, and I love it, they actually disproved their central argument against this initiative themselves in this meeting. Oh, they have to have physicals every other year. It's already required. You already have to have a physical every other year if you're participating in WIAA athletics. And that doctor who gave you that physical last year or this year, they know if you're a boy or a girl. Trust me, you're not fooling the doctor. No one's fooling the doctor. The doctor knows if you're a boy or a girl. All they have to do is attest to it. And this is a lie that's being perpetrated by that Wall Families for Freedom that's against these initiatives, where they're saying only girls by law will be subjected to invasive physical exams. So set aside that they're already getting these exams anyway. That's just a fact of life, unless you've never taken your child to a doctor. No, it's people who want to participate in girls' sports, because that's how we're going to weed out the boys. That's how we're going to weed out the boys. And, you know, they're not requiring it for people who want to participate in boys' sports, because if a girl wants to participate in boys' sports, you know, there's some avenues where that's allowed. First of all, they don't have a physical advantage, so they're probably not going to play or do very well. But for instance, we have girls here and there who participate in football because there's no girls' team for football. And again, the girls don't have the physical advantage. I watched a high school game not long ago where there was a girl who was the kicker. And it's like, okay, you know, if she can compete at that level with the boys, like, more power to her. But the other way around, it doesn't make any sense because we use our brains and we use common sense. And so they're just, again, making stuff up or fundamentally misunderstanding. And so now we have this mole on the inside of the WEA recording these meetings. And so now we know where all these asinine lies and ideas come from. And then they get pushed out to the rest of the members, pushed out to the internet and the media, and then that's how they take hold. Now, there is this insane lady on this meeting, and we're doing some digging into who this woman is. More on that in a moment. I don't think her background will particularly surprise you, but her name is Jennifer Wallace. She speaks up on this WEA meeting, introduces herself as an expert in this arena of gender and it being a social construct. Let's see what this expert has to say, shall we?
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wallace. I wanted to talk a little bit because when I first learned about this, my first thought was that it was just really naive. My background, I have a doctorate in medical molecular genetics, and I used to study human genetics. I think there is the misunderstanding in the public that there's a scientific consensus on the definition of biological sex. And unless I'm going to breed people and see if they have babies, outside of that, there's not really a consensus on biological sex.
Good God. Good God. She's saying the only real way to find out if you're a man or a woman is to breed and see if you have babies, which, of course, is one of the stupider things I've ever heard. But also, some women are women but can't have babies for other reasons and health reasons, etc. So even if you breed them, weirdo, who uses that language? It's like they want to dress like the, what do you call it? Want to dress, what is the Red Hood from the show? Handmaids, and then they're talking about, oh, we have to breed. That's literally their mindset. They think they're like handmaidens, and these girls are handmaidens because they're going to have to prove that they're girls in order to compete. Wild stuff. And that there's not scientific consensus on what biological sex really means. Really, what scientific journals are you reading? Probably the weird ones out of Washington State. Let's continue to listen to Jennifer Wallace.
Biology is a spectrum, and I think that really gets lost as we try to bin people in these nice bins, and like the majority of people are going to fit in these binary, you know, male or female, but there's a pretty large percentage of the population, 1-2%, that are actually intersex. So that's about the same percentage of folks that are redheaded. So you know it's intersex people, and a lot of people who are intersex don't know that they're intersex.
Well, they're going to find out.
And so some people may know in childhood, some may find out in adolescence. A lot of people won't know until they have infertility issues as an adult.
Okay. We're not talking about intersex people. Intersex is a real thing. That's never been what this is about. This is about boys who decide, probably under force from an adult and indoctrination, that they want to be a girl. That's always been what this is about. This is not about intersex. That's the excuse that Chris Reichdahl has used, the superintendent of public instruction, over and over. Well, what about intersex people? That's a very different situation that must be treated like a different situation. And they're using that to distract and deflect. One more gem of wisdom from this Jennifer Wallace woman.
You know, you'll have people who are, you know, maybe you think of as biologically female that have higher testosterone levels than some men who are, you know, you would think of as biologically male. You can have, and the whole idea that you can check genitals to confirm sex is silly too.
No, it's not.
There are conditions where you can present anatomically female, but actually be chromosomally male.
Like from surgery,
so there's not like a serum test. There's not I can eyeball your genitals and tell what sex you are. I can't even look at your chromosomes necessarily and tell what sex you are. I'd have to like sequence you, and then still it would be kind of as you define it. So sex ends up being really a more of a social and philosophical construct than hard biological construct.
Oh my God.
And I'm always kind of baffled by this legislation that just kind of ignores reality. And it's so much more complicated. So I think you guys all get that, but I think reminding people that there's not, the scientific community does not have a consensus on this. So even though there may be some people pushing legislation, that legislation is not based on science, even like trying to identify sex.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much, doctor. Thank you for making all of us smarter. That was really appreciate it.
Oh my God. Thank you, doctor. You're making all of us smarter. No, you're making all of them way, way, way dumber. Way dumber. Totally gullible. Saying, I couldn't even sequence your genome and know what your sex is. For the love of God. This is the Washington Education Association. These are the people tasked with teaching your kids, with teaching the next generation. If that isn't a freaking ad for homeschooling, I don't know what is. And it shows you the lengths that they will go to, the truths that they will bend to push their radical gender ideology. What is the Orwell phrase? The party told you to stop believing the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. I posted on Facebook when I woke up this morning, every day is a good day to wake up and choose the truth, regardless of the consequences. And I know that there are people out there, Democrats in positions of power, progressives even, who believe that this is all utter nonsense and it has gone too damn far. It's only going to take a couple of you. It's only going to take a couple of you to put aside whatever cost might come from speaking up, to put aside your personal concerns and to say, I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm not playing this game anymore. Boys are boys, girls are girls. We're going to be respectful of kids. This isn't an issue about kids. This isn't about hate and discrimination. This is about truth. It's only going to take a couple of you for the dam that's holding back sanity to break. And I pray that you find the ability to do that within yourselves. Absolutely outrageous. And just to Jennifer Wallace person, I do have to wonder if it's the same Jennifer Wallace from this 2017 News Tribune article. We're working to confirm it definitively. We have a strong feeling that it is. The headline, Leader of State Board Fired After Complaints of Toxic Work Environment. The director of a state board focusing on K-12 teaching standards was fired quietly in late September following a chaotic year at the department marked by staff turnover, workplace conflict, and accusations of unprofessional behavior that hampered state work. The Professional Educator Standards Board dismissed Jennifer Wallace after a September 29th session that was closed to the public. She was the very first executive director of the agency after its creation by the legislature and was making $115,000 a year. Would not surprise me that someone who gets on a WEA meeting and tries to convince adults that she couldn't even sequence the genome of a human being to determine what their sex might be fired for unprofessional conduct. So we're working to get more information on her. But this is a story about education. I thought preponderance of evidence shows this is probably her. But to not get sued, I'll put in that little addendum, that little asterisk, that we're not 100% sure, but 90%, I think 90%. So we're going to have more from that undercover recording of the WEA tomorrow. I wonder how long it is before we get a cease and desist from our friends at the WEA. Well, you know, we are journalists and we will protect our source at all costs. And I'm sure I speak for Alicia Perkins in saying that we are willing to go to prison to protect our source on this if we have to. We're not going to compromise them. We're not going to give them up because I think they're going to continue to give us a lot of dirt on the most dangerous entity in the state of Washington, the Washington Education Association. All right, coming up next, Democrats are floating the idea of an income tax on high earners, but how exactly will they do that when it's against the state constitution? Senate Minority Leader John Braun is joining us to talk about how he thinks they're going to use language in a recent Washington State Supreme Court ruling to push this thing through. First, if you are thinking about taking the First Mark Challenge, it only takes a little bit of time, and the rewards could be phenomenal, like Christine, an undivided viewer and subscriber, took the First Mark Challenge. They saved her $10,000 a year. You guys, $10,000 a year, that's almost $1,000 a month. And she said she was worried her carrier was dissolving, so she had 30 days to come up with a plan, thought, oh gosh, I've heard Brandy nag me about First Mark. I'm going to do that. And First Mark's like, yep, we can go get your two businesses, your home, you're adding a third car, great, get it all together, and we can save you $10,000 a year and still get you fantastic insurance. And she was just overjoyed by that. And then on the flip side, I think it was our subscriber Y who sent me a message and said, hey, you know, my husband called First Mark. They just let us know that our insurance we already had was great and they couldn't actually beat the price. And she said, I really appreciated their honesty. So no matter what happens when you take the First Mark Challenge, you're going to get honesty and you're going to get transparency. And when they come back, you know, they're working for you, not the insurance company. So at the end of it, you can always be feel good about the fact that they gave you the best possible advice they could, whether it's coming over to the First Mark family or sticking with your current insurance. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, let's bump up our subscriber poll for a moment. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, would you leave Washington State if Democrats passed an income tax? Would you leave Washington State if Democrats passed an income tax? And I didn't make this more specific because to me, I know we're going to talk briefly or momentarily about an income tax on high earners, people making over $1 million a year. But one of the things that I've said all along is once they get some version of an income tax, then they will come for everyone. So even if it starts as an income tax on high earners, if you think that that's where it's going to stop, I mean, you're fooling yourself. Nicole, really quick, yes or no, would you leave?
Well, no, because I probably would have already left if my family wasn't here.
That's true. You do have, you're very close to your family. And yeah, I mean, if my husband was retired, then maybe the answer would be yes. But I definitely think it would impact where we go for retirement. We're already thinking about splitting our time between Eastern Washington and Florida, but we'll definitely live in Florida 6 months plus a day. Mm-hmm. So we can make sure that that's our primary residence. 64% of subscribers said yes to this question. 64% said they would leave the state if Democrats passed an income tax. In fact, on Swamp Watch, which dropped last night, mm-hmm. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, who's one of our advertisers, he said, this will be the final straw for me. If they pass a tax on high earners, then I will pick up my business and I will leave the state of Washington. And when mm-hmm. someone leaves over a tax, you don't collect any taxes from them. You're not collecting the income tax. You're not collecting their property taxes. If they're a business like Zach's, you're not collecting money from their business in the B&O tax, gas tax, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're scaring off your central revenue stream.
There might be. I mean, I have family members that might all come together and be like, we're out of here. So
100%.
They might.
Kyle T says, my wife and I are both Washington born and raised, but my job allows me to live where I want, and it's just family keeping us here. I hate to vote yes, but I know this would drive family away, and we would go with them. Tasha, I said yes, but primarily to stay married. My husband is so over the state and their orgasmic passion for taxes. For me, it's a maybe. If they want a state income tax, then in the same bill, they need to remove property tax, sales tax, gas taxes. Just adding another layer of taxes to the already unaffordable tax burden in the state is redonkulous. Yeah, and they won't. They won't do anything. Let's see. Robert Parr, I don't think I can disengage, but I'm thinking how I can resist. Legal warfare seems the best option at this time. Sarah, I voted no, but only because I'm stuck here due to custody agreements. I'd rather be poor than be without my son. And apparently this is exactly what I've signed up for. And that's, I think, the worst of it. For people who can leave, mm-hmm. I say more power to them. But there are people who cannot leave. People who cannot leave for reasons like that. I mean, what better reason is that I don't want to leave my son? I'm in a custody arrangement. I can't leave the state. And yeah. I mean, you're so close to your family. It's like, no, I'm not going to move away from my family. So I guess I'm just going to stay here and be poor. So I wanted to start this segment with that because we talked a lot about the current budget outlook for the state of Washington gets worse and worse and worse as the months go by. And we already know Democrats are floating a potential income tax or other revenue streams in January. So how exactly will they make all this work legally? This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So revisiting quickly what put us in this budgetary crisis we're in. So we obviously already had a pretty profound budget crisis earlier this year that they had to make up for with $9 to $12 billion in new taxes when you combine state and local taxes, more around $12 billion. But now, heading into the 2026 legislative session, the revenue forecast gets worse and worse, and so they're gearing up for more taxes. This was from the Office of Financial Management. Projected state revenue through 2029 down by $66 million just from the September forecast. So every time they're looking at these numbers, forecasting revenue that's coming in, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And they said there were two primary reasons for the changes in the forecast. They're seeing lower than projected revenue coming in from housing permits and lower than projected revenue coming in from simple employment. Okay, what's going on with employment? Well, businesses are closing down. Businesses, some are leaving the state, some are just closing their doors. Because why? The tax burden has become too high, especially after the latest round of tax increases. We've done story after story after story after story on restaurants, as an example, closing their businesses, some of them in the area where Amazon operates in the city of Seattle. What happened with Amazon? Well, Amazon took 10,000 plus jobs and moved them out of the city over what? The tax climate. So what did I always say? You can attack big business, but if you attack big business, you attack all the businesses that rely on big business. And so it's just all around a big cluster F. And they should have known that they were getting themselves into this situation. Like the housing permits, they literally were warned. If you pass all these new taxes, if you pass rent control, people who have capital, who are going to develop, build homes, whatever it is, they're not going to do it here. They were literally told that. A guy from WAA Realtors sat in front of them during a committee meeting and said, people will take their money elsewhere if you pass rent control. They passed rent control and now they're, oh my God, revenue, it's down. Who could have guessed this? It's crazy. Yeah, they knew what was going to happen and they're just looking for an excuse to pass an income tax. So now maybe they have it. This was the story on October 30th that was put out by the State Standard, the first glimpse we had of something like this happening. Washington state Democrats look at imposing an income tax on high earners. The idea is brewing ahead of the 2026 session. It would target those making above $1 million. So right now, Washington is one of nine states that does not tax wages specifically. But as you know, we have in our state constitution a prohibition on any sort of graduated income tax. So that means you can't treat different brackets differently if you want to pass an income tax here. So this obviously does just that. It singles out people who make over $1 million a year, and it says, we're just going to tax you. So blatantly, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I don't think you have to be to understand that that is unconstitutional. So why do Democrats believe they can do it? That's the really important question. Joining us today to talk about why Democrats might believe they can do it is Senate Minority Leader John Braun. Gee, if only someone had warned them that some of their housing policy might lead to lower projections of housing permits. Weird.
Yeah, I mean, they've been claiming to do work on housing policy, but they're really just working on the margins, not willing to dive into the really hard problems, Growth Management Act in particular. And they're shocked that that housing starts are down when we're in the middle of a housing crisis. So not only are we not building the houses that our folks need here in Washington, it's starting to materially impact the state's budget because it's an important part of our economy.
Well, and I also, and we played on the show a clip from a realtor who said during the rent control debate, if you pass this, people are going to, developers and builders are going to, they're going to take that capital, they're going to move it somewhere else. And that's exactly what they're doing. So, you know, that's obviously a significant portion of the money that comes into our state coffers, as is, you know, employment and business. And now we see some businesses leaving the state. We keep seeing headlines like every single day. So do you see either of those two revenue streams improving anytime soon?
No. I mean, this is all the culmination of this taxed first policy the Democrats have used to address their budget issues over the last few years, is that if there's a problem to be solved, they think a new tax will solve it. And the reality is those taxes are having a real impact on our business climate in many sectors. Everything we're hearing right now is that they want to come back and raise more taxes to fix this problem. And now, surprise, because of the ever-increasing taxes, our revenue base is starting to go down. So this is a big, big problem. And their approach seems to be, we'll fix it with new taxes. And we know that's not going to work. It hasn't worked before, and it's not going to work now.
Well, and you make a good point about new taxes in addition to the largest tax increase in state history. So where do they go find that revenue? Because they already pushed through, you know, some estimates put it higher than like $12 billion. So let's say $9 to $12 billion in new taxes and fees. So, right. I mean, didn't they squeeze everything they could squeeze out of us already this year? I mean, where are they going to find that money?
Yeah, and the difference in that range is whether you include state, you know, local taxes or not. It's about 9.5 in state and the rest in local taxes. But it's a big number, an order of magnitude larger than any number in the past. And what the rumor mill is, and it's always ramping up here in the last few months before session, is they want to go back and talk about the wealth tax, which we know doesn't work from experience around the world. They want to go back and talk about, you know, the state version of the jumpstart tax in Seattle, which, you know, saw the relocation of, what, 50,000 jobs from Seattle to across the lake to Bellevue or other places in the country. And now they're just being candid. I mean, they're talking about just going ahead and putting in place a real income tax, in spite of the fact that they just voted on a citizen initiative of the legislature last year to make it, you know, to forbid an income tax. Now they're showing their true colors and they want to come back, and they think based on the ruling from the capital gains income tax that they can, in spite of the fact that the Constitution says we can't tax property over 1%, it has to be uniform. They're saying, well, an income tax isn't really about own, it's about the transaction when you get your paycheck, and therefore an excise tax, and we can therefore have an income tax. And they feel, I think, confident that the very liberal state Supreme Court will back them up on that. So these are the things that I'm hearing about. All of them, enormous taxes. I mean, we're talking, you know, even a couple of those will outsize the tax increase from this year. It's insane. And businesses and people are leaving the state in droves, and they're taking their ability to create an economy, build wealth for our state with them. And we're going to be hurting if this keeps up.
Yeah, and you make an interesting point there is even though they push through this massive tax package, there were some taxes that even just a couple months ago were too controversial for them to push through, like the wealth tax, like expanding Seattle's failed tax on high-paying jobs. So it's like, well, now we're at the bottom of the barrel, and a year later, they'll revisit those things that were too controversial just a couple months ago. The income tax thing is interesting. So what they're planning to do, allegedly, is target those making above $1 million. First of all, I don't know if you can answer this. Do you believe they would even propose it if they weren't confident the state Supreme Court would back them on it? Do you believe there are conversations that happen behind the scenes?
Well, I can't attest to any conversations. I certainly wouldn't be surprised. But if you read the ruling from the capital gains income tax, the ruling from the state Supreme Court, it makes a very clear, bright line between property and the transaction for property. And it seems to me, and I'm not a lawyer, but I talk to lots of lawyers, it seems to me that sets them up to come back and throw out the nearly 100-year-old precedent that says our state's constitution prohibits a graduated income tax. So I think they're set up to do this. And I want to be clear, when I first saw it, I mean, I thought it was a bad idea, but it seemed like it was primarily targeting tech and maybe healthcare where you have very high salaries. And I haven't seen a bill. Nobody's put out a bill yet. But as I hear additional information, this is much worse than that, if you can imagine. This is going after what they call adjusted gross income on your income tax statement. So all the folks I mentioned before, but also any S-Corp or LLC, you know, any earnings you have from an S-Corp goes to the owner's adjusted gross income. Mm-hmm. Even in many cases, they don't actually see that money. It's money that the business may make, but they would retain to cover, you know, capital investments, to cover working capital. So it's pretty common in an LLC or an S-Corp to see none or even a fraction of your adjusted gross mm-hmm. income, and yet they're going to add a 10% tax on this. And they have no idea how complicated this is for companies that do business in different states and how it interacts with income taxes in other states. This is a big, big deal. Even if you like the proposal, which I definitely do not, it's enormously hard to put in place. But they are, you know, from what I'm hearing, they're undeterred by the will of people or the complications of the tax code or what it does to our business economy. They're just thumbing their nose at any results and they're going to press onward.
Yeah. Bob Ferguson said this of the rumors of some sort of income tax. He said, "We did raise billions of dollars in revenue earlier this year, and I'm skeptical of additional revenue at this time." Do you believe that he's skeptical of additional revenue?
I suppose I'd give him the benefit of the doubt, but I seem to remember him being skeptical of additional revenue earlier this year before the beginning of the session, and then still signing, nearly $13 billion in new taxes, state and local.
Yeah.
So his skepticism doesn't seem to hold for much when it comes right down to it.
Yeah, I've long since stopped giving him the benefit of the doubt on these things. And, you know, that seems to be their solution, is not cutting. And I think what they'll probably say is we cut everything we could cut last year, and there's just nowhere left to cut. So from your perspective, does your party have any power or authority to be able to stop any of it?
Well, we are in a minority, but we have the power to present and promote good, better ideas. And that's what we've done. You know, in the last session, we promoted, we created a full budget, and that's a big deal. It takes weeks and weeks, lots of time. In the end, it's like 3 inches thick, but it was called the Save Washington budget. And it maintained the essential services. It took care of our vulnerable citizens. It did everything we need to keep operating the state effectively, and it did it without any taxes. Now, some of those ideas we used in that budget to keep our spending under control, those ships have sailed, and we can't necessarily go back. But there's still a lot of ideas in that budget that will allow us to reduce our expenses, or what I like to say, bend the cost curve inside the budget over time. And that makes a big difference. I mean, you can still do something, you can still deliver services, but you got to find ways to keep your costs down, just like any household or business budget would do. We haven't been doing that. I said we, the Democratic majority hasn't been doing that at the state level, and we do it. We need to do it much more aggressively.
It seems like they're gearing up to blame President Trump for the inevitable further increases in taxes. You know, we saw an op-ed written by House Speaker Lori Jenkins, who said Trump is going to make life miserable for Washingtonians' pocketbooks, which is just insane. But that seems to be sort of the scapegoat for them, is President Trump, President Trump, President Trump. And I know you've had some nuanced opinions on the president. It's not really about him personally, but I mean, is there any truth to that? Is there any truth to, you know, aspects of federal dollars President Trump is withholding that do put us in a difficult budget situation?
No, I don't think so. I think in that regard, you know, President Trump is getting blamed for something he doesn't cause. I think the closest argument you could make is this is a trade dependent state, and tariffs do have an impact on us. But if you actually look at the impact, it's relatively small compared to the impact of very specific policies put in place by the state, you know, Democrats in the state legislature. New taxes, new regulation, new labor costs, all these things that they put in place are driving up expenses. Even if they want to talk about, you know, the H.R. 1, the Big Beautiful Bill, which I would disagree on their assessment there. But even if they want to talk about that, doesn't go into effect until the end of next year. This whole idea that it's what's affecting, you know, the challenges we see in healthcare in particular are caused by that. It's just dishonest, frankly. It's hiding the fact that they took hundreds of millions of dollars out of our healthcare system through their very own decisions inside the budget.
Yeah. I figured that was the case, but I had to ask anyway. They really do get away with blaming a lot of things on President Trump, though. I mean, it's such a great distraction from the issues that the state is facing. All right, Senator John Braun, we appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and of course, State Senator Braun also running for Congress against Marie Glusenkamp-Perez down in the 3rd District. We were going to have him on to talk about that race, but honestly, one of the biggest things facing people across the state, including in the 3rd, is what's happening with the taxation situation, the unaffordability, and so we kind of focused on that. We'll have him back on to talk about the congressional race maybe in the new year. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Again, future42.org. I do think it's interesting, though, that nugget he gives about the state Supreme Court ruling when it came to the capital gains tax almost has language that you can see them duplicating to justify an unconstitutional state income tax on high earners. And as he's discussing this, I don't know if you saw it, but Bob Ferguson just appointed someone to the state Supreme Court, and there's a picture of him hugging her. And apparently she used to work or help set up his civil rights office when he was attorney general. It's like, their friends just get these jobs. Their friends just get these jobs. And I know John maybe is too big to say it. If you don't believe that Democrats have had conversations behind the scenes with the state Supreme Court justices who they've given their jobs to about, hey, will you make sure that if we send this to you, if this gets in front of you, that you rule in favor of it? I mean, come on. If you're not that skeptical by now, I don't know what will make you that suspicious and skeptical of what's going on. All right, coming up next, we'll have an edition, a rare edition of our segment, The Seattle Times is Trash. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com and just get the ball rolling. Not very many people sell their homes around the holidays, but it's a good time to get a jump start on what's happening in your neighborhood. He can give you a market analysis down to the block so he can set your expectations. Carlos M. had a 5-star experience with Wes Jones and his team. He said selling property is stressful, especially in a volatile market, but we never doubted our decision to sell with Wes. He understood our needs, knew the market, and had a recipe for success. With an out-of-state move and needed repairs, we had to rely completely on someone we trusted. And he says they kept us constantly informed and made sure nothing was missed. From repairs to staging, showings, negotiations, and closings, all was done with care and precision. We sold quickly and for top dollar. If you want a dedicated, experienced team that goes above and beyond, sell with Wes. And Wes is just an awesome guy to work with and an awesome human being in general. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, with that, you know, the Seattle Times, they can't just talk about the bad business climate because Democrats created the bad business climate. And we all know that they can't criticize Democrats. So instead, they have to add something that's more digestible to their progressive audience. Let's talk about it in our segment. The Seattle Times is trash.
Ba 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 ba.
case, they just have to add something race-based to it. It's not enough just to talk about all the small businesses that are struggling under the same atmosphere. All the medium-sized, all the big corporations that are struggling. We can't do that. How can we make this a woke story as opposed to just a story about how Democrats have lost their ever-loving mind on taxes? Well, they do it like this. Seattle's small businesses are snared in an affordability trap. Great. What a great headline. Love that. Yes, 100%. They are snared in an affordability trap. But just for the purposes of the Seattle Times, let's talk about how it's even worse for black businesses and just make some shit up. It says, we rightly talk all the time in Seattle about the affordability crisis. The cost of rent, groceries, dining out, rideshare for Seattle residents are all some of the highest in the country. But also caught in the affordability trap are small businesses, particularly ones owned by black, indigenous, and other people of color. By every measure, they say, by every measure, running a business is often tougher for people of color. How can you have that? That sentence doesn't make any sense. By every measure, it's often tougher. So if you're going to say something definitive, by every measure, you got to get rid of the word often. That literally makes no sense, and it just shows you that they're building a narrative here. For example, a University of Washington report earlier this year found that BIPOC-owned small businesses paid higher interest rates on loans than their white counterparts. Oh my gosh, the banks must be racist. No, you pay higher interest rates on a loan because your credit isn't as good. So we can have a conversation about if it's true that BIPOC-owned small businesses are getting higher interest loans because their credit isn't good. Well, we should have conversations about why is that? How do we improve credit? How do we help people toward financial stability and financial freedom? But it's this assertion that like the system has done this to them. And again, we could go back to slavery and generational wealth. I've talked about all of those issues. But I think one of the fundamental kind of lies in this, especially in a city like Seattle, is that it's like harder for a black person to start a business because of, you know, historical wrongs. We did a story recently on the Community Reinvestment Program, which is $250 million of your money, of my money, of our money, that is being put in the hands of black community members for no reason other than the color of their skin. And a big chunk of that money, it's an aspect of the program we haven't even started talking about yet, goes to black people to start businesses. Show me a program that gives millions of dollars in loans you don't have to repay to a white person to start a business based on the pigmentation of their skin. Doesn't exist. So I actually am gonna make a bold argument that if you're a black business owner, things are much easier on you when you go to start a business. If you take a white person and a black person, both from the same economic tax bracket, you know, neither with generational wealth, and you have the black person who goes out to get help from the government and see what services are available to start a business, and you get the white person that goes out to see what help is available from the government to start a business, I guarantee you it's going to be much easier for the black person to get help from the government to start a business. And there's nothing you can say that will tell me otherwise. Now, when I started my business, I wasn't rich, and I definitely didn't have great credit because I suffered for 10 years with low, low wages in the news industry before I finally got a nice fat salary in TV news after I worked very hard, proved myself, but I only had that nice fat salary for a couple years before I quit my job to do this. But I started a business, you know, it wasn't easy for me. I had to use a lot of my own personal savings to start the business. Nobody gave me any sort of handouts. I didn't get a free millions of dollars to start a business because of my skin pigmentation. So give me a break, okay? And then I think the thing that's interesting about this story, I'm talking a little fast, aren't I? Sorry. Then I think the thing that's interesting about this story, every once in a while I get a little Ben Shapiro shaken up and just start talking fast, is the story goes on to, while it's focusing on how stuff is bad for small businesses, but especially black-owned businesses, none of the examples they give are specific to black-owned businesses. For instance, it says, Utam Mujeri and his wife started their business Spice Walla because they wanted to marry their love of business and social justice, and food just came naturally to them. Their goal was to represent Indian street food in Seattle while doing good for the community. After opening their first brick and mortar location on Capitol Hill in 2019, they now have several locations serving coffee rolls and a number of other street foods. Great, several locations started in 2019. But now, he said, there's a hit to both the top and bottom lines. Even at their affordable prices, he said, customers are more reluctant to eat out, given all their other expenses going up. He said revenue has dropped drastically for them, with the Columbia City location seeing a 50% decline. On top of that, expenses are up, with higher wages, rents and food costs taking a larger bite of their revenue. Why do you think that is? They even talk about a drop in revenue from Uber Eats, and they mentioned tariffs, which I think, you know, tariffs as part of the larger conversation are just fine to talk about. But when you talk about a local business, the bulk of what they're discussing that's hurting them, like a 50% decline in Uber Eats revenue, is the Democratic Party and progressives who have made wages raise, they have the increased wages, increased fees for Uber Eats. All of these things they mention that are increasing their top and bottom line are the result directly of progressive policies and don't have anything to do with hurting them more because they're Black. Those same policies hurt people of all skin pigmentations, regardless of you know, where they started, generational wealth, whatever it is. So it makes no sense. The whole premise of the story makes no sense. Another example. Capitol Hill bartender Charlie Smith knows this reality all too well. Even with the higher minimum wage, Smith, 31, who uses they-them pronouns, said their income has gone down due to lower tips. Smith projects they will earn about $28,000 this year while working about 30 hours a week. Smith is not looking for a lavish lifestyle, opting to not have a car to keep expenses down. Smith can clearly see how small businesses are struggling, but said it is disheartening to see the blame for these high costs be also put on the workers who are still not doing well with a $20 an hour minimum wage. I don't think the blame belongs on the workers. I think the blame belongs on the politicians who believe that just artificially, because it sounds good or looks good on a sign, setting a wage at a certain level won't have a profound impact on the overall economic environment and the economic situation for the workers and the businesses. So it's just fascinating to me how they can't just have an honest conversation about the business climate and who's responsible for that business climate. There is no one else in the state of Washington you can blame for any one of those decisions besides the Democrats in the majority and the progressives who run cities like Seattle. They own it, but they're not forced to own it because the Seattle Times won't make them own it. Instead, they put in some false narrative about how part of this is because of the color of someone's skin. Part of this is just because, you know, it's hard to be a Black person in one of the most progressive cities in America in 2025, which is, of course, absolute nonsense. I mean, even that example they gave of the Indian street food business, they were doing great. So it's like you can't use, even with their skin pigmentation, which you're trying to lead us to believe would make it much more difficult for them, they started their first brick and mortar location in 2019, and they expanded that to several more locations. So put there, and that's almost offensive to them, like to suggest that their skin color has anything to do with that. It's like, okay, they opened a business they were really passionate about, something that aligned with their culture, something that's very niche and unique in the city of Seattle, Indian street food. 2019, they did very well. They did so well, they expanded it. And then there came the crush of government intervention, the crush of increased wages, increased cost of living. The crush of increased taxes. And that's what held them down. The Democrats. The progressives. But the Seattle Times simply can't just say what we all know to be true. Because they're trash. And the Seattle Times doesn't help these BIPOC business owners by doing that. They don't help them by making it somehow about their race and not about the Democrats and the progressives who are doing this to all small businesses and all corporations. Adding that race element in it is a total distraction that at the end of the day doesn't prop up these businesses, doesn't help them succeed in any form or fashion. Ridiculous. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, speaking of out-of-control housing situation leading to decreased revenue in the state of Washington, if you are a housing provider in the state, you're probably wondering, what the hell should I do? What is going to happen this legislative session? We'll reach out to our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington, and they can help you navigate this climate that we're in politically. So first and foremost, on an individual basis, if you've got, you know, a couple units, maybe this is like a retirement plan you had and you're very worried about all these rules and regulations and how you're going to be able to survive, they can help you on an individual basis navigate this situation. And then they are your eyes and ears in Olympia. They are your advocates in Olympia. They're going to be down there trying to make sure that the stories of landlords are told, that they're not just painted as the big bad wolf who's just keeping people out of their homes and being evil or whatever it is. So join RHA today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It's about $260 a year to be a member of RHA. I think it's worth every single penny if you're trying to navigate this environment, rhawa.org. All right, very scary story out of Portland. So this is really fascinating to me, and I knew there was something up with this guy. So I was down in Portland first time, end of September. I think it was like September 28th or something. And off in the distance outside the Portland ICE facility, of course, as the riots and the protests had been ongoing, I saw my friend Katie Davis Court. She had a security guard next to her, but she was being encircled and surrounded by a group of black clad, you know, far leftist thugs. And I have these pictures, Nicole, if you could pull these up. So I've highlighted this guy's face. There was this freaky looking guy who was harassing her and was part of this group of militants. And it was vile. I mean, it was really scary. And she decided she was going to stand her ground and stood there for like an hour while they were in her face saying all sorts of horrible things. Her security guard, I think he ended up getting, you know, assaulted, and they tried to break her camera or something like that. But that guy always stood out to me. And one of the things while this was happening that I noticed is, you know, Portland police were nearby and they weren't doing anything. Like, to them, it was like, you know, you can surround a woman and intimidate and harass her and try to grab her camera, and we're not going to do anything about it. In fact, Katie decided that she wanted to file a police report for the threats and for the attempt to break her camera. And Portland police told her that she needed to leave the area in order to do that. Here's that video I took back in September.
Don't come back. Stay in Seattle, Katie. You
So it's Katie doing nothing wrong, doing her job as a journalist who has to leave the area, go down the block, file a police report. You think anything ever happened to that police report? Of course not. Same thing with nothing ever happened to me when I was assaulted down in Portland, even though I've had multiple follow-ups with a Portland police detective. And I even gave them a name and a picture of the person who I think assaulted me, and I have heard nothing back. Maybe not a surprise. But here, upon seeing this post from FBI Portland, I immediately remembered that moment and remembered this man. So this guy that Portland PD has now arrested and charged, not related to Katie's incident, but something else, his name is John Paul Cupp, but he uses the Muslim names Walid and Abu Nasubai al-Amirki. He is just some white dude who's a convert to Islam, just a white dude, okay? Convert to Islam, who's part of these radical, dangerous far-left activists. So here's what Portland police say they did. They said John Paul Cupp, 45, made his initial appearance today after allegedly making violent threats at the ICE building in South Portland. Cupp has been charged by criminal complaint with threats made against a federal law enforcement officer. According to court documents, on October 14th, 2 weeks after I took that video of him being part of this crowd that was harassing and intimidating Katie, Cupp began yelling insults at law enforcement officers as they were approaching a crowd. He threatened to kill them, sexually assault their wives, and harm their children. On November 3rd, Cupp posted a video online reiterating these same threats to federal agents and their wives. On November 13th, he continued posting violent threats online to officers and their families. According to FBI Portland, he is a prolific producer of online content and regularly posts aggressive rhetoric, calls for war against the United States, anti-Semitic threats, and threats of violence. They provided two examples of the kind of content that he posts under his Muslim name, Walid al-Amirki. An effective revolutionary must yearn in tears for martyrdom. In this way, you are an unbreakable live life in an elevated, liberated way, even in poverty and repression. An effective revolutionary must yearn in tears for martyrdom. He goes on to say, Allah took everything from me and knocked me on my ass to send me off the Yaha Sinwar Road to socialism for Portland. I call bullshit on these revolutionary groups. Would you actually kill and die for our young people? Building that unitary mission until I flop over, my brains are on the sidewalk, or they dump me in a cell. Allah Akbar, power to the people. Now, I knew looking at him that this was a dangerous degenerate that day where he's facing off with Katie. He showed those pictures again, Nicole. Now I think about what he is charged with and now what I know him to be, the pictures with Katie. And now I wonder what he was thinking about Katie in that moment. Now I wonder what he was thinking about doing to Katie in that moment. And it sends shivers up my spine. She stood there like a boss-ass bitch. And she decided, I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not going to stand down in the face of this angry mob of militants who police in Portland were more than happy to sit back and watch harass a woman. And one of them now, federally charged by the FBI for saying he would kill federal agents and rape their wives. Saying he wants to be a martyr for the cause of socialism until his brains are on the sidewalk or they dump him in a cell. Well, I guess it's going to be the latter. I guess they're going to dump him in a cell. But man, that makes me even prouder to know Katie Davis Gorton, even prouder of the work that she does down there and the many, many times where during this moment, the media pretending like what's happening in Portland isn't a big deal. The media pretending like we're making up Antifa. We're making up a problem with far-left militants. We're making up the issue of how dangerous they truly are. This is the kind of person who's in that crowd and who's been in that crowd. This is the kind of person we've been faced with when in those crowds. And now he's showing his true colors. Disgusting and really terrifying stuff. All right, this is a fun one. I always feel this way. I watched this great documentary on Fox Business yesterday about Boeing. And it was fascinating, you know, all the developments with Boeing over the years and building the plant in Everett. And I was watching the old video and everybody's so dressed up on the planes. And the planes are so fancy. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's such an experience for everybody to go and be on a plane. Not anymore. Now we have Spirit Airlines, the trash heap of the sky. Well, Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy says he wants to see us class up air travel again. So he spoke at Newark Airport, New Jersey, yesterday, ahead of the busy, of course, travel season here with Thanksgiving and Christmas. And he says they're launching an initiative to bring civility back to travel. Says the initiative follows a 400% surge in in-flight disturbances since 2019, ranging from disruptive behavior to violence. Nearly one in five flight attendants reported experiencing a physical incident in 2021. One in five flight attendants. While reports of unruly passengers in 2024 remained above pre-pandemic levels, according to the union and FAA data. So he had this press conference, which I just loved, because even if we didn't have this uptick in crazy, aggressive, horrible, trashy behavior, I really do think we need to bring civility back to many aspects of American life, including travel. Here he is.
Civility. Some of you might have noticed that we've launched a civility campaign. And I think it's important as we travel, that we think about not just ourselves, not just our families, but we think about those who are around us. And we call our better angels. In a busy time, and again, the airports are going to be packed, TSA lines may be a little longer. Maybe we should say please and thank you to our pilots and to our flight attendants. I think, again, I call this just maybe dressing with some respect. You know, whether it's a pair of jeans and a decent shirt, I would encourage people to maybe dress a little better, which encourages us to maybe behave all a little better. Let's try not to wear slippers and pajamas as we come to the airport. I think that's positive.
I love that so much. I'm not saying they should ban it, but, you know, and then he also talked about, like, keep your shoes on. Don't take off your shoes and socks on the airplane. That's just disgusting. Have some self-respect. And if you have self-respect, you might, in fact, have respect for other people. And in fact, Nicole found this great picture of how people used to dress to fly. This is your grandma? Which one? The left or the right?
The one with the hat. I think that's a hat box, right? And then the one with the glasses is her niece. I consider her my auntie because she's still alive. And my grandma passed away when my dad was sick. So she's been gone a while. But I think this is in the 50s.
Yes.
She died in the 60s. So
wow.
Yeah, oh crazy. But they used to get so dressed up and look at her in heels. Can you imagine wearing heels on a plane?
I have, but it's not a regular thing. And I'm not saying I want to walk. You know, back then, it was a little less involved in traveling.
Right.
Like you pull up, it's a small airport. There weren't a lot of jet planes flying around. And so, you know, you're not walking like today in the terminal. We got to walk like a mile to get where we're going. Probably not going to wear heels anymore. But that doesn't mean you can't have... Nor am I going to carry around a hat box. That doesn't mean you can't have some self-respect. And, you know, also, airlines play a role in this. Airlines now, in the videos I was watching, they were serving, like, espresso, and they had these fancy things, and the flight attendants were dressed up or whatever it is. Now they're like, you want this nasty-ass cracker bag? Here it is. So it's just like, okay.
I guess
how do we get around that?
How to make it as cheap as possible. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you used to smoke on planes. It used to be, no big deal. Just make yourself at home.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, airlines have also reduced, especially Spirit Airlines. It's been probably 10 years since I took a Spirit Airlines flight, maybe a little less than that. And I told my friend, I was with Johnny at the time, and I got canceled, and they like wouldn't rebook us. It was just trash. I was like, I will never do that. It doesn't matter how much money I save. I will never ever take a Spirit Airlines flight ever again.
Allegiant is similar.
Not doing it. But I love that. I think this is great. What's wrong with treating everyone like respect and having some self-respect when you go out into the
absolutely
world, you
know? I like the please and thank you reminder, because it is shocking today. Kids that don't say please and thank you, can we please remind children to say please and thank you? I mean,
there's always some rude person on a plane. There's always one rude one. And it's just like, dude, calm down. Everything's fine. And don't put your little toesies up between the seats. I will cut them off. I will bite your toe off if I see that toe creeping up in between seats.
I don't think you should be punished for that.
Just ridiculous.
Be allowed.
Death penalty. All right. I love that picture of your grandma. That's great.
So
I love
cute.
That so much. Yeah. All right. We'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned with the risk exposure of your retirement portfolio? If the answer is yes, or I don't know, should I be concerned? Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwer Capital, and he'll walk you through all of it. He'll talk about the impact AI is having on the market, give you a preview for 2026, talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible, especially for those of us who are like, screw this state, I'm going to live 6 months plus in Florida. You got to come up with a plan. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. I just had to read this really quick. Smoke Burp said on YouTube about the, I don't know, smoke burp. Do you burp? I've never smoked a cigarette, burp. So I would not know. He says there should be an alcohol blacklist. I agree. That is something that, you know, airline to airline. I don't think that I want some government system that says you're not allowed to drink
like
on a plane.
Like the no-fly list, no drink list.
Right. Is like, hey, for Alaska Airlines, unfortunately, we can't serve you alcohol because last time you got all effed up on booze and were harassing the flight attendant or whatever it is. I don't hate that idea. And I'm sometimes surprised by how much alcohol they will serve on a flight.
I know. I also have noticed that if they don't want to give you more, they just don't come around.
Right.
They just stay in the bag.
Because they don't want the confrontation. Yeah. But I have a friend who drinks a lot on flights.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, how did you get so effed up in the 3 hours it took to get from SeaTac to Las Vegas? And they have like no limits on the Las Vegas flight. They're like, send them out the door. I swear they get some cut of the revenue from the casinos. Like, send them to us as drunk as possible. So they lose all this money. Okay. But I'm like, I'm sitting there like, cut them off. Not my husband, of course. He's responsible.
I think you realize people's livers don't work as well as you think they do.
Yeah.
In the air.
One drink for me
at
is
that
like,
level.
Unless I'm going to bed. Like, I'll have two if my plan is, if it's a long flight and I'm going to bed. But like, there's no way I'm having probably more than one if I have something to do at the end of that destination. Well, just not happening.
For both of us, I believe it just makes us sleepy.
Yeah.
Like, we're just like, give us an extra drink and we're just going to take a little nap.
Yeah. All right. On the WEA lies about the initiatives, Moon Goddess, $2 super chat, the undivided bail fund for protecting our mole. We will protect the mole at all costs. Sergeant Pickles, my homeschool four-year-old is smarter than that person. Yeah, I bet they are. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's funny. Sasha Windfeather, as someone pursuing a teaching degree, it really worries me that this happens. This doesn't focus on education. It focuses on control. Yeah. David Callahan, repetitive and silent bully type of brainwashing. Yes. Like, it is. I mean, just think of this. She literally said, you can't sequence someone's genome even to determine their gender. That's someone who they called an expert on the meeting. That's disturbing. The last, awesome. Rob's Pierre, children are safer being raised by I read these cold, and so sometimes they make me crack up. Children are safer being raised by wolves than in the hands of the Washington Teachers Union.
I mean,
Union.
They could probably learn survival skills that way, at least.
What is the show about the kid that's raised by wolves? And then it's like,
well, that I think in a
jungle,
the Jungle Book,
like Mowgli. His name is Mowgli. The Jungle Book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that movie. That's a good one. Dems looking for new revenue. Old Sub Sailor. They want the fighters to leave this day to make it easier to micromanage the remaining people and continue their socialist communist agenda. You're probably right. Let's see here. Looking up for Jesus, I would be willing to pay an income tax if at the same time they abolish property tax. Yeah, and I just don't trust them to do that. I don't know how, you know, once they get the income tax in, everything else is off the table. Like, it's already in, they're not getting rid of it. And then maybe they say, oh, we'll get rid of these other taxes. But then next year, they'll be like, oh, we're in a budget crisis, so we got to add that tax back. Yeah. So I just don't trust them. Daniel Jerka, communists are always shooting the horse they ride. Yeah, never a good idea. Philip, I love the name Philip. It's so distinguished. Mm. All the current problems in our states are directly related to the complete lack of education in the elected officials. They have no idea how a municipality operates or tax revenue is created.
I do think that all of these officials that are being elected that are zero experience and very young, I do think it is making me think we should have some sort of requirement. Like, at least, I mean, you have to, you know, take a 4-hour online class to get a liquor license just to pour a beer. Can we not make them take like a little class online that says, this is the Constitution, this
managing
is
money,
this is how you run a business? Yeah. Like, just an online course, maybe.
I agree. But then also, you know, some of the people who've been in government the longest and have the experience are the most ineffective. I mean, look at Bob Ferguson. His whole career's been in government, and the guy passes asinine policies. And yeah, he's doing it to placate, to try to get to some other level he's looking towards. But yeah, and age matters to a certain degree. Like, I get asked, because I've joked on the show about running for governor, and it's half a joke. I mean, I might, but I've said that I think that the first number in my age should be a 4. Mm-hmm. If I want a job like that, and I'm not saying I think I'm pretty mature for being in my 30s, but I also understand that as I've experienced more, as I've aged, look how different my beliefs are than they were even 2-3 years ago. So how can you take a job when you're still finding out who you are, when you're going to take a job, you know, being a leader of other people? And I'm not saying that you can't learn and grow into your 50s and 60s and 70s. But I do think there's something about your 30s where you are still fundamentally finding yourself. And I don't think that goes away at 40, but you have enough life experience under your belt. So there is an age thing. And I say that as a millennial, that no, I don't think that somebody should run for governor in their 30s. I just don't. I think you got to have before something, and then let's consider it.
Well, I mean, that's been the thing for president for how long?
Yeah.
There has been an age requirement
35.
For becoming a president for a long time. And that was when 35 was a lot older than it is
mature.
Now.
Sure, right. That's the issue. And even J.D. Vance, he's how old? Can you Google how old J.D. Vance? He's in his 30s. Isn't he like 38 or something? J.D. Vance is super young. But J.D. Vance has also 41. See, 40 something. But he's had a lot of life experience. He went through some incredible hardships, you know, was in the military, did all these things. So not everyone of the same age is the same maturity level, right? I think it's person to person. But I think 35 is way too young to be president of the United States, especially in today's immature environment.
Oh, yeah.
They were, you know, doing all sorts of things.
It was back when, I mean, it was when the Constitution was, when, I mean, that was when the age requirement became a thing. So
right.
Back then, people lived till like 40.
Right, that's so true. If they don't, that's very true. We got to let them be president or they'll die soon, you know, from the plague.
We should probably up that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe you guys disagree, but I just think that I just look at myself, how much I've changed in the last 5 years, and I just think it's too young. I think you're finding yourself. And I do have respect for life experience. Youth brings certain things, but... you know, age is just something special that comes with getting older. All right. On the claims that BIPOC small businesses get hit harder than white businesses. Stupidity. VIP says white Seattle liberals obsess over race just to virtue signal. They don't actually care. So transparent. Oh, 100%. I just saw the white dude who won the strongest woman in the world competition and a black woman lost to the white dude. Who do you think the leftists are going to hold up? Oh, no. Because remember, we already said. Black women, even a black woman lesbian, comes below a white dude that says they're a woman.
Just I did appreciate her walking off the podium.
Yeah, she just walked off. She's like, this is ridiculous.
This is stupid.
And they're claiming they didn't know, the organization is claiming they didn't know it was a man. Take one look. Mm-hmm. Okay, take one look. Tanya Butterton. That's an awesome last name. Butterton. The Butterton family. I feel like that's what's the series everyone likes? Yes, the Buttertons, the Bridgertons. A good way to measure the business argument would be to have a bank loan approval manager come on and declare if there are parts of their loan risk algorithms that do factor in race. Obviously, car insurance risk assessments factor in age and sex. Who knows? Maybe there's something to it. But for them to come out with this feels crap article without bringing that proof with them makes... them an opinion source, not a news source. Right. And that sentence I kept going back to, where it was like, by every measure, black people are often. It's like, no, you can't have that. It's either by every measure or it's sometimes or often. That makes no sense. Let's see here. On Duffy wanting us to dress up to fly again, Merwin Wren, as for airlines, there is cheap and there is inexpensive. Airlines in general have become both, and their clientele shows it every day. Now, I want people to be able to experience air travel. People have to travel even if they're in a lower socioeconomic bracket. And I think an entity like Spirit Airlines gives people the option. And when I use that, I was in college or I was in my first couple years of my career. And if I could save a couple bucks by not getting a drink on the plane or not getting help at check-in, then I would do that. So I think there's a place for it. You definitely have to know what you're getting into, though. But that has expanded just too far. You know, we ought to, for people who want to fly without the trashy drama, there ought to be an airline for that. And I just don't know that there is anymore. Let's see here. I'm not saying like you have to do a credit check before you fly. I'm just, how do you, I don't know.
It's a safety issue.
It's just ridiculous. And hey, rich people can be trashy too. Some of the biggest asshats I've flown next to if I've been in first class, the biggest jerks. It's like, so let's, it's not necessarily economic. Shine the light. Stop making seats for munchkins and we'll see less aggression. Yeah, that can be a cause of aggression as you're just shoved in like a sardine, All right, we'll end with this super chat from Old Sub Sailor. $20, thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. What, are you not joining us tomorrow?
Yeah,
we're
going
to be here tomorrow. Where are you going to be? You got something better to do? I don't know. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check, which is immature but funny. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been named the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for a third year in a row. There are a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, their roofing service is top-notch, but they also do other things. It's a great time of year to get some custom holiday lighting installed. They can come out there, do it for you. No domestic fights over the lights and the spacing and untangling things. Just let Valentine take care of it. They also do, in addition to that and roofing, they do gutters clean, installed, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning, all of that. But of course, if you need a new roof or think you might, they'll come out, they'll inspect your roof for you. If they can fix it, they will. They won't push you into buying a new roof until it's really time. And then when that time comes, they have flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. Please tell them you heard about them on Undivided and let me know how their service is so I can share that on the show. The company's mission: to serve and care for our neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, President Donald Trump was out pardoning the turkeys this morning. Still one of my favorite American things. It's like, because I love the little poor buggers, you know? And I don't even think turkey tastes good enough to justify killing them. Turkey doesn't even taste good. Doesn't matter how you cook it, deep fry it, cook it in a vat of whatever. It still doesn't taste good. It's just my unpopular opinion. We're not doing turkey this year.
Oh.
We're doing a roast, like a pot roast.
Yeah.
And then we're doing a pork tenderloin. Going to have a couple options.
I like it.
No turkey. But anyway, so President Trump pardoning some big fat turkeys, and he wanted to make a big fat joke.
I had a little bit of a Pritzker joke. I was going to talk about Pritzker in size, but when I talk about Pritzker, I get angry because he's not letting us do the job. So I'm not going to tell my Pritzker joke. They have a very cute little joke, you know. Some speechwriter wrote some joke about his weight. But I would never want to talk about his weight. I don't talk about people being fat. I refuse to talk about the fact that he's a fat slob. I don't mention it. On a more serious note, as we gather around the dinner table, I'd like to lose a few pounds too, by the way.
I refuse to talk about the fact that he's a fat slob. Well, at least he tried to save it at the end by saying, oh, I need to lose a few pounds too. Quiet, piggy. That has been today's closing sanity check. He just takes things too far sometimes. Just too far. Funny, but too far. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We have a little extra thanks this time of year for our paid subscribers. We love all of you, but you know, when I talk about who I'm really grateful for, it is our paid subscribers who sign up to support the show for $5 a month, and that makes the show possible. So if you'd like to be one of them, you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We will be back here tomorrow, no show on Thursday, but we will have a pre-Thanksgiving episode tomorrow, so we will see you then. Quiet, piggy.